This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
As Chuck just announced, my name is Nenzen, and I am the abiding teacher here. And I'm very happy to be with you practicing here at Jikoji today, seeing old friends and new faces, and thank you for making your way up the mountain. I like to start the Sunday program when I start to speak by thanking the Ohlone people, who were the first people of this land. They took care of this land for, and continue to, for 10,000 years. They've been in the Bay Area. These land acknowledgments sometimes get a little stale and tiring, and I basically want to bring your attention not to a sense of guilt for having taken this property from them, because it was not voluntarily given, but out of a recognition of our intertwined lives and the respect and gratitude for our endless interconnection. So I give gratitude to the Ohlone people who took care of this long before we did. Speaking of giving gratitude, sometimes on NPR and PBS, they say, this program is brought to you by, and I would like to say, this program is brought to you by our founder, Kōbun Chino Otogawa Roshi, who founded this temple. And our residents, our Ino Taishin, who takes care of this temple. His wife, Michelle, who has 2 days off a week from her full-time job off campus and gives one of them to us to sit with us here today. To our beloved Chiro, whose calligraphy and tea and attention to every stone and rock and pebble and leaf and branch. If you think it looks beautiful outside, you can bow to Chiro. And rain. And also to Shoho Roshi, Mike, over there. I first came here because another teacher in another lineage brought me here. But it was Mike's teachings that brought me back. It's all your fault that I'm still here. And he guided, truly guided, Jikoji for over two decades. Not many people know what that feels like. There's only a few. Kind of in awe of his ability to stay with it and take care of this place. And so I want us all to bow to him. His wisdom and compassion is here. It's inseparable from whatever it is you experience here. So I want to thank him. So speaking of this program is brought to you by Kōbun. Kōbun was Mike's teacher, Shoho Roshi's teacher. And this next coming weekend is Kōbun's memorial sesshin. So beginning on Friday, Shoho and I will participate with you, any of you who come, in a celebration of Kōbun Chino Otogawa Roshi, who is the founder of this temple and the founder of the Phoenix Cloud lineage, which is all over the world. This next weekend, sesshin is a very short and very kind of not so quiet sesshin. Usually a week of sitting is in silence, and a week, not 3 days. So this is a little different. It is really a celebration of his teachings and his offerings. And here we are all in his temple. And this year's celebration is actually even a little more profound and fun and celebratory, because over the Memorial Weekend on Saturday, we will celebrate the Shuku Tokudo, the priest ordination of Devon. He's right there. Devon is a professional musician, a drummer. He's very accomplished. I've heard him live, and it's amazing. I've also heard him live here in his dorm room without drums. His upcoming vows have been on my mind because it is a very happy event in our lives, in our shared lives. And in honor of this event, I want to talk about a koan today from the Blue Cliff record that has something to do with a drummer. He's a drummer. So, just for your context, putting this in order in your own mind, this is the volume two of the Blue Cliff record. These are koans, they're all from the Chinese tradition. Seisho, here's a note from you that is my bookmark that is koan. And these were actually these teaching stories from the Chinese tradition were collected in about the 10th century. They weren't called the Blue Cliff Record until the 12th century, but there's 100 of them. And they were originally collected by Zhuo Du Zhongxian. I'm sorry, please don't punish me for getting that all wrong. Someone else can help me get the pronunciation. We call him Secho in Japanese. And he also wrote not just the koans down, but he also wrote some verses that you'll hear a little bit of that today. This is case 44 from the Blue Cliff Record. And the teacher in this story is Hoshan, also known as Heishan Wuwin or Kasan. And one thing about Hoshan is that he was kind of famous for being pretty intense and direct and had the habit, apparently, of hitting a drum, maybe very, very close to his students' ears to get them to let go of their ideas about what's happening, to just let go. So imagine that right next to your ear. He's kind of immortalized for being rather fierce. So that's enough koan esoterica today. I'm going to read to you the koan. And the name of this koan is Hoshan's Knowing How to Beat the Drum. Hoshan imparted some words saying, cultivating study is called learning. Cutting off study is called nearness. Going beyond these two is to be considered real going beyond. A monk comes forward and asks, what's the real going beyond? Hoshan said, knowing how to beat the drum. Again, the student asked, what is the real truth? Hoshan said, knowing how to beat the drum. Again, the student asked, mind is Buddha, by the way. This is kind of an inside joke between this teacher and the student. Not really a joke, but he's referencing another koan, okay? So don't worry about it. The student asked, mind is Buddha. I'm not asking about mind is Buddha. What is not mind and not Buddha? And Hoshan says, knowing how to beat the drum. Again, the student asks, when a transcendent man comes, how do you receive him? Hoshan said, knowing how to beat the drum. That's the koan. So, as you came in today, you may have noticed Jiro's calligraphy outside. This is something. It said, this is it. Did you see that big sign that said, this is it? Even though those words are there and these words are here, koans and the teachings and even these words here, this practice is not about words. All the time, every teacher with words is trying to get a student to go beyond the words, to go to their actual, direct, unique, you could even say quirky. Experience of this is it, this right here, right now. And I love this koan because every single profound and I'm sure deeply sincere question the student asks the teacher is met with the exact same maddeningly reliable answer, knowing how to beat the drum. So I think the most of the time our minds look at koans and we want to maybe attach to the drum as a metaphor for something else. But Hoshan is very clearly saying, no, we're not actually talking about a drum anyway. He's talking about knowing how to beat a drum. If we make it into a metaphor, we're now adding another concept. And he's saying, let go of all conceptual ideas, or what Shoho would call conceptual imputations, something that we're putting on top of this is it. So Hoshan is intentionally frustrating the monk so that possibly the actual teaching of this moment and this moment and this moment pierce this little ego he's holding up, this little shell of being a fixed person, separating him from reality. So how many other people other than Devin here play drums? Anybody? A drummer, Curtis. Okay, that was amazing. We got one. How many other people play any instrument? Okay. So you've all had the experience of being pretty frustrated at the beginning of learning an instrument. Well, I play the shakuhachi, and amazingly enough, my shakuhachi teacher, who I did not tell to come today, is in the room. Nyoshui-san. So I should say, I spent a lot of time negotiating with this bamboo tube, and it actually plays me most of the time. By the way, the practice of blowing through that bamboo, playing shakuhachi, is called sui zen, which means blowing zen. When I first started, I didn't want to especially learn to play the shakuhachi. What I wanted to be, I wanted to sound like Nyoshi-san. I wanted to blow Zen. I wanted to use this instrument to express what I told him when he said, "What does it sound like to you?" Because I went up to him in awe and said, "Oh, what is that instrument?" And he said, "It's a shakuhachi." And I just stared at him. He said, "What does it sound like to you?" And I said, I don't know who was talking, but somebody said, it sounds like the whole range of human experience. I don't know if you remember this, Nyoshi-san, but he said, I will give you a lesson. I'm like, oh, well, I'm not asking for a lesson. He said, I will give you a lesson. It was very much grasshopper and the master here. Okay, I'll take the lesson. I had been incredibly moved by his expression of this is it, and I remain incredibly moved by the sound of the shakuhachi, not necessarily from me, but the sound of the entire experience of this is it. So I took his flute home and practiced with one of his flutes, and I practiced really hard. I mean, I really tried hard to make a decent sound. And I practiced a lot. I would hold the flute just perfectly, my arms in the right place, my mouth where it's supposed to be. I would give it everything I had, trying to summon up all the cosmic gravity I could pull together, visualizing the great absolute void. And I would take this deep, incredibly obnoxiously self-centered and aware breath, and I would blow. For many, many, many weeks, the sound that came out was kind of like the sound that a balloon makes when you let it out the air. It progressed maybe a little better to the sound of a whiny tea kettle. And one of my sons said to me, "It sounds a lot like a sick cow." So I decided that maybe I was facing a profound obstacle having to do with the equipment, right? Maybe the equipment's not good. Maybe it's the flute and not me. Isn't that handy? All the time we do this. Maybe it's them and not me that's causing my suffering. So I went to my shakuhachi lesson. I said, I can't do it, and I'm trying so hard. And Nyoshi-san takes the flute, but he watches how I'm trying to blow, first of all. He's looking at me very carefully. And then he takes the flute from my hands. He just blows this perfect, crystal clear note. And then, just to put the hammer in the coffin, does it several trills up and down. Like, clearly it's not the flute. And then he barked, a rather gentle bark, but kind of a bark. Your bottom lip is too far back. You're not engaging your hara. Just breathe out through the flute. He didn't talk about the great mystery. He didn't talk about the absolute. He didn't talk about the void. Now, he could have. He's got the chops to do that. He didn't. He pointed to me and said, "It's your embouchure. It's your breath. It's all you." That was maybe a very early lesson in knowing how to beat the drum. Hitting the drum is not about merging with the absolute, because you want to go be merging with the absolute. It's about where you put your lips. It's about how present you are right here in the this is it moment. It's about the immediate physical reality of meeting this. New flute, by the way, Bob, relatively new, even though I can play my old flute. It's about the instrument in your hands. Sometimes the instrument is a drum, sometimes it's a flute, sometimes it's your mouth, not in an embouchure, but the way you speak. The way you speak and when you speak. It's about your expression. It's about making eye contact or not. It's about how you move in the world, like a robot, at ease, however it is. How to hit the drum is not something anyone can tell you. You have to return over and over again to the moment, the moment, the moment, each breath. And it's really a practice to be with each moment, to be really courageously honest about what your own experience is in each moment. We have to practice being with whatever this is. Not our ideas about it, not what we think it should be, but whatever it actually is doing right now, whatever it is that you are creating with this body and mind. Unsurprisingly, I highly recommend Zazen for practicing with being with this. So I mentioned there are verses with these koans, and this is the verse. One hauls rock, the second moves earth. To shoot the bolt requires a 10-ton crossbow. The old master of Elephant Bone Cliff rolled balls. How could this equal Hoshan's knowing how to beat the drum? I report for you now. Don't be careless. The sweet is sweet. The bitter is bitter. So one hauls rock, one moves earth. I think it speaks to the exhaustion we feel, this the kind of the heavy labor of insisting that reality be the way we want it to be. trying to impose our concepts, our ideas, our opinions onto what's actually happening. Kind of to force this moment of reality into the box of what we want, how it ought to be. If you're hauling rock or moving earth, it's a lot of work. And you feel it in your body. This is not easy. This is not an easy moment sometimes. It's like trying to use your hands to quiet the ocean in those moments. To shoot the bolt requires a 10-ton crossbow. That's pretty heavy, 10 tons. And I think it might be referencing the kind of spiritual strength that one must summon to let go, to let go and let go and let go. And the principal thing we have to let go of, the thing that generates everything else, sorry, it's this equipment, this one, the self. This selfing that we naturally do sometimes can just drop. To let go of our intellectual way of analyzing and separating the good from the bad. To cut off, kind of at the very root, the ideas we have. And then sometimes when you let go like that, the teachings blow right into you. They pierce you like the flute is breathing me. The drums are beating you and you. This is what Sesho is teaching. To shoot the bolt, you need a 10-ton crossbow. You have to be insanely dedicated to try to pick up a 10-ton crossbow. Which is to say, you cannot be relying on an ego-driven muscle, right? You're not going to be strong if you're relying upon, look at me. It doesn't work. You have to somehow approach it all. Letting go of this big identity on your shoulders. It's exhausting. And I think actually in life, it's kind of noisy too for other people. And you might sound like a sick cow playing the shakuhachi. So in the little verse, he talks about the old master at Elephant Bone Cliff. I had to do some research because I don't know who the old master at Elephant Bone Cliff is. The old master at Elephant Bone Cliff is a real person named Master Sui Feng. And he lived, like many masters, and was named after his mountain, which was Elephant Bone Mountain. And when students would come to him and ask him incredibly intellectual, complex thoughts, he would take these little wooden balls and roll them down the aisles of the monastery. That's what he would do. You know, what's the meaning of life? Ding, rolling a ball. I think he was doing that the way Hoshan was as well, to try to frustrate the students out of their mental ideas about what this is. So, in this little verse to our koan today, some are sweating under the weight of these big egos trying to move the earth. And the old master is just rolling balls. Or telling his students, the other old master telling his students, knowing how to hit the drum. And then the verse asks, how do we compare Hoshan's knowing how to beat the drum with the old master's rolling balls? That's in the verse. And it's like a kind of kick in the pants. In the verse, he's saying, are you actually still comparing things? Are you comparing yourself to other people? Are you comparing Hoshan to the old master with the rolling balls? Give it up. There's no comparing. You've missed the point. None of this is about technique. It's not about the right flute. Beating the drum, rolling the wooden balls, blowing the shakuhachi. Each is a direct, immediate, unique relationship with what's here, unique to you and shared with all existence, moment by moment by moment. Whatever comes out of this flute and whatever comes out of the thump, thump, thump of your hitting the drum, there's no theory about it, no rocks to haul, no earth to move. No one is trying to stop the motion of the ocean. Just meeting it. Sacho's last verse says, "Don't be careless. The sweet is sweet, the bitter is bitter." We are not beating the drum or rolling the balls to get to a new philosophical abstract. If you just memorize the sutras and memorize the koans and, you look great doing this stuff, no doubt. If you just cling to the forms or cling to emptiness, Hoshan would probably call you careless because you're not in this moment right now. Realizing this is it is like the koans, not in the words. It is actually sitting in the messy reality of life as it is, moment by moment, your actual experience. And when I say you, of course, I mean all of us. We practice, whether it's the drums or the flute or rolling balls, to be with this right now, just this. Not yesterday, not tomorrow. You may not have a tomorrow, just this. Because this is it. Dogen, the 13th century founder of all of Soto Zen, who, by the way, had his own collection of 300 collections he brought from China to Japan, different collection. But he said, when you walk in the mist, when you're fully present and whatever is happening, you'll get wet. You'll be awake with what's actually happening. He also said, do not suppose that what you realize becomes your knowledge and is grasped by your consciousness. In other words, you don't get to go get it, you don't get to have it. And you have it, and you are free. So when life is sweet, it is so sweet. And when it is bitter, it is bitter. We have to taste it as it comes. We don't want to complicate the actual raw, spontaneous receipt of all of this with ideas, with concepts, by forcing it to be something else. Reality is exactly what it is, moment by moment, and we might as well agree with it. So next Saturday, Devon will receive the precepts again, the Bodhisattva vows. He will put on his robes for the first time and will receive a Dharma name, a new Dharma name. He will not be adding anything to this beautiful being. He was not putting on anything. Thankfully, thank you. He's not even asking to put on anything. He is not reaching to be recognized or seen. Rather, he is just humbly acknowledging in the presence of his Sangha the actual rhythm of his life, which is, of course, our shared life as it is arriving right now, right now, right now, and also next Saturday. Just every beat by beat by beat. Taking these vows is one way of expressing a commitment, an agreement to be with all existence, with all beings. And Devin agrees. He's going to meet each moment. He's already doing it. The sweetness be the sweetness, and the bitterness be the bitterness. I don't think he's going to attribute his experience to the drums. I think he knows where it comes from. So we are all Devin. We are all trying to get our timing down, right? Can we live this precious life just moment by moment by moment, meeting it exactly the way it is? Stopping any sense of fighting ourselves first, and then each other, and then the world. When we stop that, kind of, oh, I don't like this. When we accept that the bitter is bitter, we can enjoy the sweet. And then we can express wisdom and compassion for every single Buddha we meet, all of you. Actually beating the drum in our own weird, quirky, spontaneous, sometimes sounding like a cow, a sick cow way, is actually a skill that we have to practice. And as I mentioned, Zazen is a very good place to start practicing how to be with life as it is. Knowing how to hit the drum is not escaping things as they are. It's not looking Zen, it's not sounding Zen, it's just facing the music. We practice to be with this no matter what arrives because we know, we already know this is it. So, in a little less than a week, Devin, who knows how to beat a real drum, will step into his robes. He will commit to his seasoned, rhythmic heart to the service of the Sangha. Without looking the part, he already has done so. And I thank you for that. When Devin beats the drum, when I blow the flute, when the old master rolls balls, when you speak to yourself, to anyone else, nothing is hidden. You're already expressing your wisdom and compassion. So pay attention to what you're expressing. When Devin beats the drum, when he takes on his robes, there's nothing hidden and there's also nothing holy. He is wood meeting skin. I don't know, are drums still made with skin? Kind of, sort of. In any event, you get the idea. He is wood meeting skin. Through these woods, through the city of Milwaukee, through the whole world. In the silence between the beats, as my shakuhachi teacher would make me listen to the silence between the phrases. And Devin's beat is going to show us exactly where we are together. Just like you. Here. Now. Koban very famously would sit on the seat of teaching and not quote chapter and verse. He would let whatever he wanted, whatever he could offer, emerge naturally from the room, from the circumstances, in this spontaneous kind of connection, alive with the now, warmly, openly, directly, meeting what is here, right here. Koban, we're still sitting. So I hope we can ask each other and of ourselves to step into each moment kindly, warmly, even affectionately, and directly, practicing how to beat the drum. Thank you. Okay, it's your turn. I'm really astonished that you're here, Noshi-san. I don't know. You must have heard the flute this morning. John.
Thank you, Nenzen. One thing I'm trying to reconcile is, you mentioned, the tasting the sweet and tasting the bitter, right? How do you kind of reconcile that with when we have agency or volition, and let's say you're going through a hard time and it's not something you can change immediately? You could, kind of get stuck tasting the bitter, so to speak. Yeah, I'd just love to hear your thoughts.
Thank you. I think I can relate to that. I bet everyone here can relate to Sean's question, which is we spoke about tasting the sweet, tasting the bitter, recognizing that's what's here. And how do we not give up our agency? I'm already answering, but he's asking, how do you reconcile this with the fact that you have agency? In fact, it's major with the Buddhist teachings, right? Don't give up your agency. You have the responsibility of your own agency. There may not be any free will, but you're responsible for your choices. And how to deal with it when you feel like all you can taste is bitter. That's all that's coming. And you don't see a way to respond that will make the bitter taste go away, where you get stuck. Am I close? Okay. Close enough for jazz. And I guess first I want to address the agency question because I am very sensitive to this because I think a lot of people can somehow, in my view, torture this practice into giving everything to the Buddha. I don't think that's what we're doing. I think we're giving everything to life and not avoiding the responsibility of what we can do in each moment. And it's not easy. I mean, there's hard stuff and it's bitter. My own experience, and many of you have heard me speak about this, is Angie Boisevan, the first director of Soji, one time told me in the midst of a lot of roughness in my life, I said, it's so hard. It's just so hard. I'm not being mean. I was kind of like, and she said, I said, but then sometimes I look up, and we were in a Zoom call. I look up, and it's so beautiful outside. And she said, yeah, get your chin off the sidewalk. It really works for me. Like, look up, look around. It's sweet and bitter, not only bitter, not only sweet. And then you wait for the appropriate, skillful response to your own experience. Sometimes this takes a while, you know? But it's not just bitter. You got to take the bitter with the sweet. They're together. That's a Carole King song, by the way. So I think that your responsibility to life, as you are being expressed as life, you and all of us, is to try to do your best to allow the bitter in, allow the sweet, to notice it all, and then wait for an action that takes into your heart and into your expression, your choice, everything. It does not mean that people will like it, okay? There isn't a perfect answer. And my experience is they often don't like it. And they often will turn around and say, you, boo, 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 boo. Well, you can say, I hear you. I hear you're hearing it that way. I'm doing my best. And they're doing their best too. You just be you, as true to you as you can. Wholesome action. And just in case you're going to ask me what is wholesome, it's always the same answer. It doesn't harm you, and it's your best intention not to harm anyone. So this is where we stop fighting here, and therefore stop fighting there. And again, this is my like caveat emptor about this whole path. Other people may not like your choices, and they may accuse you of all sorts of stuff. You should look at what they're saying, see if it gives you a jolt of like, oh, is there something there? Sometimes there may be. And you can pick up that and take care of it. And sometimes, just a big fat rejection. And you can say, I hear you. Yeah?
Thank you.
Anyone else? Everybody ready for cookies? Ah, Ethan.
We hear you play some.
Oh, I played a little before you got here, I guess. I wish Bob were here to play. He's the one who can play. I'll play a couple of notes for him. It's not going to sound good, Master, because it's not even on musician sound, I'm sure, but oh God, close your ears. I'm talking to him. What was I playing this morning? Okay. Hello. Really, no. Thank you. Anyone else want to try sounding like a sick cow for a few weeks? I have a practice flute. So does Curtis. Curtis is an incredible player. So you got a bunch of shakuhachi folks in the room, so to speak. And Seisho, my shakuhachi pal, we played together quite a lot all over Europe.
Has the shakuhachi ever been accompanied on drums?
Nyoshri, has a shakuhachi ever been accompanied just shakuhachi and drums? Yes.
Could you play with Devin sometimes?
Could I play with Devin? Devin can play the hell out of me, I'll tell you that.
You guys got a week to practice.
Okay, whatever you say, Master. Okay. Oh, go ahead.
Shakuhachi has been played along with the Han at the beginning.
I did that today. You started that tradition, and I am carrying it on. So this morning, Giraud played this wooden block outside, is called the Han, and at monasteries and Zen centers, it's our clock. I mentioned this to the beginning meditation instructees, and it tells us this is your time to go be part of your responsibility to the collective, to the collection of the people who are practicing. And Nyoshwisan and I started in Santa Barbara Zen Center. There was this relationship, and we did all sorts of things. So there's the Han, and then he would be outside, and I would answer him inside, or I would be outside, and he would answer me two flutes. It was cool. It was this little kind of endless relationship, you know? And so, yes, I've carried on as instructed. Anything else?
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.